Thank you for tuning in to Tripod Talk Radio, where we're spreading the word that it's better to hop on three legs than limp on four. Hosted by Jim and Renee and Wyatt Ray of the Tripods Blogs community at tripods.com, Jerry's place for canine amputees and their people.
Hello, and thank you for listening to Tripod Talk Radio. Today we are having a conversation with Dr. Alex Avery, a veterinary surgeon and founder of one of the internet's best pet health resources, OurPetsHealth.com. Through fun videos, blogs, and photographs, Dr. Alex is dedicated to enriching the lives of pets by empowering pet parents with accurate, helpful information about preventative health care, illness, and other situations faced by pets. Dr. Alex graduated from vet school at the University of Bristol in the UK in 2006 and has since helped companion animals everywhere live healthier lives in both the UK and New Zealand, where he is currently practicing. Please stay tuned for a fascinating chat with Dr. Alex about topics near and dear to every member of the Tripods community, including boosting appetite after surgery, proper pain management, understanding pet health supplements, and more. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get started. Welcome to Tripod Talk, Dr. Avery.
Well, thanks so much for that amazing intro. It's great to be invited, and I'm looking forward to our discussion today.
Dr. Alex, hi, it's Renee here. It is so nice to finally meet you. I have been a fan of your website for quite some time now. I've been following your very active presence on social media, and I just want to say thank you. You are doing so much to educate pet parents like us. I don't know how you find the time to do it. You have a great website.
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot of work, as you'll be well aware. And, you know, I think the more websites, you know, like Tripods and mine that are out there kind of providing great information, the better the health of our pets can be. So, yeah, no, it's great that people are enjoying us.
Thank you. It's an honor to hear you say that, because we are all about accurate information and putting a stop to a lot of the not so accurate information that gets spread around the internet. And that's one reason why your website caught my eye. Just the information you provide is excellent. It's easy to digest. It's really great. So I was drawn to your website because here's this vet in New Zealand, and he's telling people around the world what we all need to hear about our dogs and cats. And I would just love to get your perspective on animal amputees in New Zealand and the UK, because, as you know, most of Tripod's audience, I'd say the good majority are members who are based in the States, but we have a growing number of people from other countries, and we're learning all the time from vets like you. So can you just share with us your experience that you've had with Tripods in the countries where you've worked?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess to start with, I've actually had my own Tripod as well, Stella, who was a wee little kitten we ended up adopting, who was brought into the clinic, and she had some really serious injuries in her front leg. So I'm kind of aware of some of the issues, you know, both from an owner's perspective as well as from a vet's perspective. And I guess a lot of the problems that develop that result in amputation, I mean, they're going to be the same the world over. And I wouldn't say it was a common thing, but it's definitely something that we see, you know, on a reasonably regular basis. The big reasons, I guess, that we would end up amputating a leg would be more along the serious trauma side of thing rather than the cancer cancer aspect, which we don't necessarily see so much of. I think I've never practiced in areas with big Rottweiler populations, for example, who are really prone to kind of bone tumors. And I think it's something that a lot of people will accept as an option more readily after a traumatic event, so be that a broken leg or some really severe skin injuries, degloving injuries, road traffic accidents, that kind of thing. I think people are a lot more accepting of the need to amputate compared to tumors. So I guess that's my experience. But I think generally owners will be more than happy with that option after kind of discussing, you know, the different aspects of the disease, if it, in the case of cancer, or the different options, surgical options in the case of traumatic injuries. And some people come to that decision, you know, very easily. Others, understandably, you know, it takes a lot of thinking, wondering what life's going to be like, you know, after that big surgery. It's a lot to get our heads around as an owner. Mm-hmm. And there are often lots of questions that need asking and well, I wouldn't say guarantees to be given, but kind of guarantees that quality of life is at the forefront of our decision making. And, you know, ultimately the vast majority of people, you know, do end up opting for that amputation when it's appropriate, you know, after appropriate questions and support to help them make that decision.
That is really great to hear. So it does sound like there's a growing acceptance that, yeah, it is okay for an animal to be happy on three legs. They can enjoy life. I'm curious, what about larger breeds of dogs? Is that something that people are afraid of doing, or are they accepting of, like, say, a Great Dane losing a leg?
Yes, I think there probably is a greater degree of caution in our big dogs. I mean, a lot of them might have, you know, certainly when it comes to cancer and that kind of thing, they might have arthritic changes already. And I guess it's a case of, you know, it's not a decision that is going to be appropriate for absolutely every single individual. So it's assessing, mm-hmm. it's assessing the pros, you know, the likely kind of comfortable, active lifestyle kind of after that surgery, or if a patient is already, you know, really struggling on their legs, then, you know, it might not be the best decision going forward. So yeah, I think there is a concern with bigger dogs, especially. There's an increasing awareness of arthritis and all that kind of thing as our pets age. That message mm-hmm. is getting out there, and yeah, that's something that I guess is a concern for some people. But we've always got to think of, you know, what's the alternative, and sometimes, you know, the alternative is to call things a day and to euthanize our pets, and maybe that is appropriate depending on the problem. But equally, amputation, in my opinion and in my experience, often, you know, leads to a great quality of life and a great ongoing quality of life afterwards.
That is great to hear. It's cats and dogs the same the world over, you know.
Yeah, they, absolutely.
They face the same challenges, and so do their parents. That's really great to hear. So let's talk about amputation recovery, because I'm sure you've seen your fair share of them.
Yeah.
So some of the common problems that we see, I'm sure your clients see as well, but it includes dealing with a lack of appetite. You know, the animal does not want to eat when they're on pain medication and trying to heal. And then that brings up the subject of pain medications during recovery. Can you share your best tips that you give to your clients for managing appetite and pain management after surgery?
Yeah, so I mean, pain management is a huge topic, isn't it? And I think if we look mm-hmm. back at the kind of dark, distant days in the past, you know, where we thought, you know, as a whole, that, you know, cats didn't really need painkillers after surgery, and, you know, and dogs, well, you know, they could have a shot or a couple of tablets, and they, you know, and they just get on with it. We're thankfully in a situation where we've got a lot. Yeah, it's horrible to think back, isn't it? But, you know, we didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess we didn't know any better, if you like. But there's so many different options, but there's no one size fits all solution. So what we give to one patient might be, you know, not enough to keep another patient comfortable, or it might be, you know, too much and cause some of these other problems. So be that a lack of appetite and, you know, a bit of sedation or tummy upsets and that kind of thing. So really, it's not a one size fits all. I'm a big fan of keeping my patients in the hospital for, you know, for a few days, maybe after any big surgery like that, certainly kind of 24 to 36 hours is kind of a minimum, just so that I can be sure that the injectable drugs that I've given, they're kind of wearing off. We can see what kind of result our oral drugs are having, so we can get an idea of what our patient's going to be like when they get home. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's something, is to not kind of rush your pet back home. It's, you know, we all want to have them back, you know, back at home where we can look after them. You know, it's a less stressful environment for our pets to be in their home environment, but you know, kind of accepting and taking on your vet's advice and not trying to rush them back. And then just ongoing to work closely with your vet. So if you think your pet is painful, you know, if they're not moving well, or if they seem overly sedated, or if they feel a bit nauseous, you know, that maybe they're being sick or something, just to really keep in close touch with your vet, because it might be that an additional painkiller is needed, it might be that there's a change that needs to be made, or dose adjustments and that kind of thing. So, you know, really just working together and coming up with the best strategy for, you know, for your individual your individual pet. When it comes to kind of appetite and things, I mean, that's a big thing. It's a big surgery, isn't it? There's no ways of glossing over the fact that it is a big surgery. You know, that it's not something that you'd expect them to recover overnight. Though, I mean, in my experience, it's amazing how quickly, you know, our dogs and cats do recover. If you think of it, yourself being in that situation, you know, you'd be laid up in bed for months probably, wouldn't you? So
absolutely.
Yeah, so it is amazing, but there's definitely things that we can do from a from an appetite point of view. We can, you know, warm up some food. We can use stronger smelling food. So a lot of our dogs and our cats, especially, they're really their appetite's really heavily involved with the sense of smell. So if they can smell something tasty, there, you know, that really can kickstart things. We can hand feed. That can help. We can use kind of recovery diets that are really high calorie and palatable. So, you know, I like to say a mouthful of that is worth two or three mouthfuls of something else. So, you know, if they're taking in a little bit less, they're still getting in a reasonable amount of nutrition. And I guess going for our cats, one important thing to avoid is something called food aversion. So if you've got a sick cat and they don't want to eat, if you just stick their food in front of them and leave it there, then that's going to just really put them off ever eating that food again, potentially. So they just get that real aversion to what's in front of them. So just trying, you know, warming it up, trying to hand feed. But if they're not taking it on board, then just actually taking all food away for a couple of hours before starting again. You know, you don't want to be trying to force it in their face, or syringe feeding them ideally is not ideal if we can get away without doing that. So that's something, you know, to bear in mind for our cats. That way. And I guess another thing I wanted to say about pain control is actually there's lots of other things that we can do as well as drugs. So drugs are fantastic. You know, our painkillers do an amazing job, but doing things like having rugs down on slippy floors so that our pets aren't falling over, you know, it's good after any surgery when there's a degree of, you know, imbalance or weakness, but certainly adapting to life on three legs, you know, it does take a little bit of getting used to, building up strength in that other leg, getting used to balancing. So we want to avoid falls if we can. We want nice soft bedding, beds that, you know, our pets can easily get into without tripping and falling, you know, maybe ramps going up some stairs or to get into the car, that kind of thing, especially with big dogs. You know, we don't want to be damaging ourselves trying to get our, you know, our pet back home. So, you know, ramps and that kind of thing are good investments at the very early stages, and something that, you know, will have use later on as our three-legged pets age. So, you know, they'll become, you know, stay useful for a long period of time.
Yeah, you know, that is a subject we'll definitely talk about in a bit, but it's remarkable how much of the things that you recommend doing for a new three-legged animal are the same kinds of things we would do for any four-legged animal when they become a senior.
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
Kind of like practice before you actually get there.
yeah. Well, exactly. You know, it's a big jump in our mind, and it's a big transition. And I think those things that we need to be aware of, and perhaps, you know, hyper aware of with a three-legged dog or cat, but like you say, they're exactly the same things for a senior dog. You know, they're the same concerns that we have, so it's just being aware of those problems and being aware that they may just happen at a slightly, you know, younger age or an earlier time potentially. So yeah
definitely. And arthritis is one of them, and I know I didn't have this in my question list for you, but you know, you are big on arthritis awareness, and I love that. I love that about your website, because, you know, most of us don't think about that until it's too late, until the signs are so obvious.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I really,
it's a big frustration. Yeah, it's a big frustration I have as a vet when we get a client come in and, you know, their older dog or their older cat, they're a little bit stiff and sore. And they're clearly sore and they're clearly struggling, but we're just accepting that as a normal kind of old age change. You know, old dogs, they're a bit stiff getting up in the morning, or, you know, a cat's become a bit withdrawn and a bit matted, but yeah, really they're painful, and there's no reason that they should be in pain. So it's very frustrating when, you know, our pets are telling us they're sore and we're not acting on that information.
Yeah, exactly. And just because they can't tell us in our own language doesn't mean we can't try to learn theirs, because
exactly.
That's all they have.
Yeah, and, yeah, that's all they have. But they let us know very clearly if we know what to look for.
Yeah, and actually, so much of the signs of arthritis are similar to what it looks like when a tripod has done too much activity, whether it's like right after surgery and they're recuperating, or months or even years later. What are some of the signs we should be aware of that, let's say, our new tripod is getting too much activity for their own good?
So I guess if they're getting too much activity, then we'll often see a stiffness the next day or after they've been lying down for a period of time. They might be struggling to get up. They might be, slipping around a bit more unsteady. It can be quite difficult to interpret limping in a three-legged animal, obviously. You know? So that can be something that can be quite a struggle and will be individual changes. But if you're aware, certainly, after they've had their amputation, for some time, then you're going to be aware of how they move and just being aware of any changes in that. But other things, they might just be withdrawn. So if they're worried that they're going to be hurt, if they're touched or if they're knocked, then they're going to try and avoid those situations. So our pets are very good at trying to avoid becoming sore or being hurt. So they kind of take themselves away. They might growl, or they might hiss in the case of a cat if they're really sore, that kind of thing. They might start licking over one particular area. So just like we would rub a sore, sore patch, they kind of lick that. So you might notice that they're just focused on one area. So those kinds of things, I guess we want to be aware of.
And you have a great educational campaign for new subscribers to your website, don't you, about arthritis? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've kind of tried to break down, kind of arthritis is a huge topic, obviously. It's got the whole, what causes it, what are the signs of it, what are the different treatments we can use, and it's certainly not just painkillers, it's some of the other things we've just discussed, kind of changes to their management, exercise, what supplements we need, are appropriate, how we monitor it. It's a huge topic, so I've tried to break that down into a little kind of free course that just goes through each of those in kind of bite-sized pieces, just to give us an idea of the kinds of things that we should be thinking about and the kinds of questions we should be asking our vets, or the kinds of things that we should be expecting our vets to talk to us about, just so that we can try and come up with a really individually tailored plan to try, and keep our senior pets or our pets with arthritis for whatever reason, just to try and keep them as happy as we can and as pain-free as we can and monitor their progress, as they go forward, because, it's a progressive condition, arthritis. It will get worse, but if we react to that, if we know what to look for and we react to it accordingly, then there's no reason that our arthritic patients and our senior patients can't be pain-free and happy long into their senior years. So that's certainly something that I offer. That's just a wee free email course there.
We'll be sure to include a link to that where people can sign up when we blog about this discussion we're having today. I have lots of links from your website I want to share with people. It's a great website. And so speaking of arthritis and pain management and all that, I'm going to jump ahead real quick to supplements. Pet supplements is a huge topic, and boy,
absolutely.
I know you have a lot to say about it, a lot. So let's get started on that. Let's talk about some of your favorite three supplements, say, for example, for cats and dogs, and some of your tips for finding high-quality supplements, something that we're not going to throw our money away at. How do we do that?
Yeah, so it's tricky, isn't it? And like you say, it's a huge topic, and it's easy to be just completely bombarded and left completely confused when you go to the health shop or whatever. So I'm a big believer in listening to the evidence behind a treatment, and that's with whatever. And there are some things that we've got fantastic evidence for. We've got some things that actually have been shown not to really make any difference at all, and other things where the evidence just isn't there, and it might be that it's a great supplement, but we can't prove that, and we don't have any proof of that. So for me, fish oils are a big thing. So our omega essential fatty acids are really important. They've been shown time and again to have great anti-inflammatory properties, to help our arthritic painful patients. So they're also something that is generally very easy to give. They're pretty palatable. They're not expensive. They're readily available everywhere. So that's something that it is often kind of my go-to first supplement. It's also got, as well as joints, it's got great effects on the skin. So it can help with with itchy dogs or just with dry kind of flaky coats, that kind of thing. And kind of talking about senior pets as well, it really does help with brain function and has been shown to help in some cases with senility and dementia and that kind of thing. So yeah, fish oils, I guess, is number one. You know, we're advised to take them in a lot of cases. So yeah, I think that's great. The next thing, certainly thinking of arthritic pets, is our therapeutic joint diets have also got some great evidence behind them. They maybe fall into the same kind of category as our fish oils because they've got this added omega fatty acids, but they've also got other things in them to help keep our pets a good weight. So to help stop them gaining weight and becoming obese, to help them maintain their muscle mass, you know, and burn off any excess fat and that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm kind of quite a fan of those. And then I guess at number three is our glucosamine and chondroitin supplements. So they're probably our most common ones that people think about when they think of kind of joint supplements. And I'll throw in the green lip muscle kind of products as well. A lot of those actually come from New Zealand. So yeah, I'm kind of close to that source. But they're again, they're a good source of omega fatty acids and glucosamine and chondroitin. Now, you know, it's an interesting one. People think of those as often the be-all and end-all with supplements for joint disease. The actual evidence behind them is a little bit mixed, so I think we can have a moderate level of confidence that they actually do a good job, and so they do work. But I think a lot of the time, people really overstate how well they work and how much they do. And I guess going back to kind of my frustration with people with early arthritic pets, especially, is that oftentimes they'll say, "Oh yeah, they're on a glucosamine supplement, and you know, and I'm happy, and that's, you know, so I'm doing something, and we'll leave it at that," rather than saying, "Well, actually, they're not doing, you know, everything that they need to be doing, and there's more that can be given." So I guess those would be my top three. One that kind of I'm keeping a close eye on, and I think a lot of people are, is the CBD oil as well. That's becoming, you know, very popular, and it's becoming more readily available.
In New Zealand too, huh?
Well, not in New Zealand, so no, we don't have that. But, you know, being, like you say, it's an international world online, so I'm certainly aware of that, and that's something I've had that question asked to me. There's not a lot of data at the moment. There has just been recently a good study looking at CBD oil in arthritic dogs, and actually it was quite a positive result. So it's definitely something where, you know, a single study doesn't necessarily mean that that's the be all and end all and that is the answer. But the results are encouraging. So I guess watch this space, and that might be something that we're reaching for more and more, you know, as it becomes, you know, legal and available in different areas. So that, you know, maybe that might be my fourth supplement to think about. As for finding supplements, you know, if you decide what you want to give, how do you know it's any good? The choice that you're making, and I've certainly seen investigations where you've got a lot of, you know, the top brands, and they'll say, you know, glucosamine chondroitin, for example, and they'll compare the amount that they claim is in the product to the amount that's actually there, and there's huge discrepancies. So you know, it's impossible to know every single product out there. So as a general rule, I say don't shop based on price alone. You generally, as with most things in life, you get what you pay for. So if something's, you know, super cheap, then there's going to be a reason for that. I'd ask your vet which products they recommend. We certainly, you know, only stock products that we're, you know, more comfortable with, or, you know, we'll only make recommendations of products that we're more comfortable with. I'd stick to well-known brands that you already trust. You know, if there's something that you're already using that's a trustworthy, well-known brand, then that's great. And avoid kind of online-only products. You know, it's one thing buying things online because you can get them, you know, cheaper than in the shop. But if it's only available online, again, I'd have my concerns about, you know, its source and claims and all that kind of thing, and how it's processed. So yeah, I guess those would be some tips to think about when you're deciding which actual product to get.
Wow. So what about pet versus people supplements? You know, a lot of people say, well, I can get fish oil for myself and it costs less than the stuff on the shelf at the pet food store, so why shouldn't I just use the one for humans? What are your thoughts about that?
I think a lot of the time with a lot of supplements, there's probably very little difference, and the difference might be just it's got a dog or a cat on the sticker, and they charge a premium for that. We do need to be careful, you know, if we're talking about supplements as a whole, there will be different things that we need to be aware of. So some, for example, fish oil, human fish oils will contain xylitol, which is a sweetener,
really?
Which makes it more, yeah, which will make it more palatable to us. But xylitol is incredibly toxic to dogs and cats. So, you know, we definitely should be avoiding things like that. Or some fish oils will have added vitamins, and actually to such an extent that that can be quite dangerous as well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that really goes back to, you know, talking to your vets and seeing which products they recommend, because it's definitely not always the case that one product is the same as the other. If we're talking about, you know, just the glucosamine chondroitin, if that's all that's in there, or if our fish oils and that's all that's in there with no supplement, with no, you know, nothing added, then mm-hmm. there's probably very little difference. But yeah, I would always be talking to your vet. And I guess if you're using a pet specific product, then you can be fairly safe in the knowledge that you know, that is likely to be safe if it's something that is a kind of a mainstream and recommended product compared to some of the human ones. Because like I say, there's so many different brands out there. So if someone asks me, well, what's this brand like? I, in all likelihood, won't have a clue because there's just so many, you know, that you can't keep track of them all.
Yeah, and I really love the recommendation to talk to your vet, because you have your own pets and you are only going to give your pets stuff that you feel comfortable giving them. So same for your clients. And
well, absolutely. And, you know, we put a lot of ourselves into our job, and, you know, we do our best for our clients, you know, and our patients. It's really important that we're recommending things that we believe in. That's going to be the case in the vast majority of cases. So, you know, ultimately we'll only have, you know, our patients' best interests, you know, at the forefront of our minds. So yeah, that's where all our recommendations would come from, really.
Very good to know. And as far as the results go, are there, like, you know, what kind of time frame? Let's say we have a slightly arthritic dog like mine.
Yeah.
He's 9 years old, getting up in age. And, you know,
yeah.
if I just started him on a new supplement for arthritis,
yeah.
how
yeah.
soon could I expect to see results? Or would other things play into that? Like, say, you know, I don't know, different type of exercise or little, you know, less exercise,
yeah, so
or something.
It's difficult, isn't it? So we... Mm-hmm. We'll often make lots of different changes at the same time, so it's difficult to know which one's doing, you know, which one's responsible for
yeah.
any improvement that we see. I think with supplements, really, we're talking months. It's going to take 2 or 3 months probably to see a significant difference. We might start to see something within a month, but yeah, it's really a long-term, you know, a long-term plan rather than a short-term fix with our supplements. So it's something, again, that's another reason to start things earlier rather than later, because it's going to be, you know, up and running in the system when it's needed. So yeah, it does take a lot longer. If we're changing exercise regimes and that kind of thing, then we're going to see the results sooner. It's still going to take time for, you know, muscles to adapt and that kind of thing, you know, weight to come off or what have you. But we're going to see changes sooner. But unless we're giving, I guess, pharmaceuticals, then often changes mm-hmm. happen in a you know, its progress is slow and steady, rather than really, really rapid.
Mm-hmm. So we just need to be on top of it before it gets so bad that, you know, we need it to happen right away. And
yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's difficult to assess our pets as well. There's been, you know, if we think of placebo in us, you know, how do you know something's really, you know, really working well?
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same for our pets. It's something called caregiver placebo. And vets are just as guilty of this as owners. You know, we're really invested into our pet being comfortable, into our pet being healthy. And so we give something and we really want it to work. And so we see an improvement. And yeah, like I say, vets are just as guilty. So it's to try and be subjective, to try and, you know, measure, you know, how happy you think they are, or, you know, on a 1 to 10 scale, how well are they moving, that kind of thing, just to see if it is making a difference. But it's challenging, especially when the progress is slow over, you know, a long period of time.
Caregiver placebo. Have you talked about that on your blog yet?
Yes, I have actually. Yeah,
you
yeah.
have. Okay, we're going to point people to that topic, because that is a really interesting idea. And that kind of leads us to our last topic here, because we just have just a few minutes, and I wish we had longer. But let's talk about helping our pets as they age. That is a huge deal, and now that our pets are living longer, thanks to great input from vets like you helping us and guiding us through their life with us. Talk to us about some of the highlights of the kinds of things you suggest to people about helping their pets age with dignity and just being able to enjoy life.
Yeah, so I guess quality of life really is the driving factor behind any decisions that we should make with our pets' care, you know, regardless of what age they are, but especially as they become, you know, become older, they become senior, and they start to, you know, potentially struggle with some of the challenges that brings. So, you know, just our quality of life just means we need to answer the questions, you know, are they happy? What are they struggling with? You know, how can we help them best cope with whatever challenges that they're facing, just so that they can, yeah, be full, kind of full, lead full happy lives and be fully integrated with the family. So, you know, pain is a big thing, and we've kind of already discussed a lot about that, but just being proactive is really important, being aware of what we're looking for, what changes might happen, and jumping on them when they do happen. But, you know, we try and keep them as, it's one thing kind of treating conditions as they come along. The other factor is trying to keep them healthy in the first place. So it's not rocket science, really. It's kind of keeping a healthy weight. Again, it's the same as any aged dog, but keeping them a healthy weight is going to make a big difference. And actually, for our arthritic dogs, going back to that, I would say one of the biggest treatments that we can give is weight loss. You know, it's not something, unfortunately, that's very easy or that we can give in a pill. But if we can, you know, get to a healthy weight, that makes probably more difference than anything else that we can do. For our senior dogs, we can give them a diet that's appropriate for their age. So, you know, their energy requirements are different, their protein requirements, their nutrient requirements are all different. So just giving them an age-appropriate diet, paying attention to dental hygiene. So ideally, that's something that, again, that we do throughout their life so that they have nice, clean teeth. They don't have, you know, horrible sewer mouths with rotting teeth. Yeah. And we're in a situation where our pets have got this chronic inflammation going on in their mouth that then has knock-on effects to their kidneys or their liver or their heart and just general body health. So, you know, that's something that's really important. Or we're left in a situation where we've got a really senior dog or cat who's already then got kidney disease or diabetes or whatever, and we're left in a situation where we need to anaesthetize them and remove teeth because they're causing significant concerns. So, yeah, that's something else. Not ignoring any minor issues. So just like the pain, if there's something that's starting to develop, then jumping on that, investigating that at the earliest stages rather than leaving it till we get to a crisis point. And just really keeping in regular touch with your vet. So we do, you know, we generally recommend annual health checks. You know, maybe that's with revaccination, depending on what the schedule is. But that health check is really important. And in senior dogs, there's certainly an argument for doing it every 6 months. If we think, you know, that our dogs, if it's, you know, seven years of our life is 1 year of a dog's life. So if we think of 6 monthly checks, that's only really us going to the doctor every 3.5 years. So, you know, that doesn't sound too excessive if we think of it like that. So a lot of change can happen in, you know, in a relatively short period of time. So, you know, that's something to think about as well. And then, you know, another thing for our senior pets is actually their mental engagement and how well they're interacting with the family, how, you know, what their mental ability is. And that's something, a drop off that we see in a lot of old dogs and cats. So we definitely are recognizing more and more senility and dementia in our old pets. Like you say, they're getting older and they're getting exactly the same challenges that we're getting in our old age. And so to try and kind of stimulate their brain function and keep them going and keep them active, and that, you know, we can use puzzle toys, we can use puzzle feeders like balls that are full of their food and they have to, you know, knock it around to get their food. We can teach them new tricks. So we can teach old dogs new tricks. It might take a little bit longer and they maybe shouldn't be so complex, but, you know, just spending time interacting with them, trying to teach them new things is really great. And then again, knowing the signs of senility and dementia to look out for so that we can jump on that sooner rather than later. And then just being patient with them. You know, their eyesight might be going, their hearing might be going. So just being aware, it might take them longer to respond. Don't get angry with them. Don't exclude them because they're seemingly not responding. You know, just try and keep that engagement with them is really important.
I couldn't agree more as I sit here looking at my 9-year-old German Shepherd with his gray face. And, yeah, you know, it's hard because they can't do those physical things that they used to do. And especially for a tripod, it tends to happen a lot sooner in life. And you know, what we tell people is you have to rethink your activities. You know, it's not just about walking or throwing a ball now. It's about a lot more than that. It's about engaging and communicating with your dog or cat and just doing things that are within their capabilities. And of course, that is the best way to know what those capabilities are.
Yeah, but in a way, but also we rely so much on what our clients are telling us about their pet, because, you know, as owners, we know more about what our pet's life is like than your vet can ever know, because, you know, we're seeing a tiny snapshot. So it's definitely having that discussion, but being aware of the things, and like you say, adapting to their needs and adapting your lifestyle to their needs as well. So if you've always gone for a run with your dog, but they're not able to do that, or they're struggling with that, it's not just a case of, well, you go for your run and, you know, dog stays at home. It's a case of adapting your exercise so that they could still have that stimulation of being out, you can still have that companionship. It's, you know, things just change, so the interaction is maybe different, but we're still getting that same, you know, that same relationship, the same stimulation, you know, that they deserve, really. I mean, we should be looking after them in their old age. You know, they give us so much, they bring so much to our lives. It's, you know, it's our job to kind of repay the favor, really.
Yeah, it is. They don't ask for much, and it's the least we can do. Yeah. Well, Dr. Alex, you are a fantastic guest. You have so much insight, and we really, really appreciate you being here. I love your website. I plan on spreading the word as much as we can, and I just can't thank you enough for educating all of us pet parents out there. Thanks for being here.
Oh, no problems at all. Well, thanks for everything you do. I mean, I've certainly, since I've discovered tripods, I've been pointing people in your direction as well. It's fantastic for owners to have that resource there, people who have been in, you know, been in that situation, because there's no substitute for experience. So if we can, you know, have stories of people who have struggled with the same things and a friendly ear to who will listen to us, you know, that's so important with challenges that we might face as pet owners.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so much for that, Dr. Alex. This has been very informative. Listeners can learn more about your work and the many resources you offer at ourpetshealth.com. For many other tips to help pet parents through the entire tripod journey, please join the discussion at tripods.com.
Until next time on Tripod Talk Radio, learn more about canine amputation recovery and find the best gear for three-legged dogs at tripods.com. (laughs)